Jimi Hendrix. Ah, wild. It's great. Now, we're going to interrupt this special broadcast in order to do an interview with, in our ongoing series of interviews with third-party candidates running for political office throughout the state and the nation. We've got Chrissy Kiefer. She's running against Pelosi here in San Francisco. And welcome, Chrissy.
Well, and, thank you. Thank you.
And, yeah, I understand, let's see, you've been trying to get equal access on all of our notoriously, well, they're not so liberal press out here in San Francisco, this being the home of the West Coast Stock Exchange.
That would be true. It seems clearly that most of the media we have at this point is very middle of the road and, you know, in their own way sort of stumping and pushing the Bush agenda. So it's wonderful that you all are here, and long live KPFA. I think radio stations and work like yours keeps many of us sane.
Well, we do our best. You know, we're anything that can be done to keep any degree of normalcy going. And certainly what's going on right now isn't normal. What's your platform? Do you have any kind of a normal platform? Bombing the world, that doesn't seem very normal.
No. Primarily, I'm running as the Green Party candidate against Nancy Pelosi because I have a desire to kind of break up that middle-of-the-road Democratic Party, which actually is one of the biggest problems that we have. I mean, clearly the Bush agenda is a terrible problem, but the Democrats haven't done anything to drive a wedge between those of us in California, the freedom-loving people of San Francisco, and the Bush agenda, which has its own kind of end-of-the-world affect to it. And Nancy Pelosi and her colleagues just seem to be going along with it and haven't done one demonstrative thing against the war or about global warming or calling for the impeachment of the president. And now with this bombing of Lebanon, they don't have their position on that is only that Israel has a right to defend itself. In my opinion, that's not a political position. That's not a strategy. That's not a foreign policy. That is one thing. That's a sentiment whose day has come and gone. We need everybody at the table. This is a horrible, horrible thing, the amount of children that are dying and the destruction of Lebanon, which is supposedly our ally in the area. I mean, who needs enemies if you treat your friends like this? And you would think that the representative from San Francisco would come out against the bombing and call for a ceasefire. That's just the minimum she could do, and she hasn't done that.
Sure. Oh, I know. It's a mess. And, yeah, that's what I'm the normalcy aspect of it. Hypothetically, the politicians are there to fix the potholes, to make sure that there's no rats in the streets and that our taxes are being spent wisely. And they don't really seem to have much much desire to go after normalcy, after calm maintenance of and management of the properties of the people. Yeah, so it's definitely living in exciting times seems to be their big theme.
Well, and also just to use the word normalcy, when you watch, you know, I'm a news junkie like probably you all are as well, and I watch the three channels, you know, CNN, MSNBC, and Fox, and what they do is they normalize the most hideous kind of violence. They desensitize us to it so that after watching a day and quote, being on the front lines with them, watching the bombing go on and on and on and on, you just sort of, you know, you just sort of take it in with your coffee and you kind of move along, and there's no kind of immediacy or urgency or analysis that allows those of us who want to participate in stopping it any kind of even a vehicle for getting there. So, again, just, you know, people really have to think about where our media is going, and the fact that you all are here and there are a couple other progressive stations, I mean, those are the lifeblood. You are the lifeline and the lifeblood to our political movement and our consciousness.
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that. We've got this problem of the desensitization, and just about a week, well, more than a week or so ago when the bombing started, going on 3 weeks ago, the desensitization of that, they were actually scrolling on the bottom of Fox especially, is this World War III? Apocalypse? Is this the start of the apocalypse? And then they figured out that Bush wanted to go on vacation, so they've toned it down, and they're calling it a crisis and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And now, if Bush was going to go off on a vacation during the beginning of the apocalypse, That'd be a little hard to stomach, you know, and maybe he wouldn't even be able to do much on election day with a record like that. But if he goes off on a crisis, well, that's so.
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, that whole apocalypse, end of the world kind of thinking that we all, you know, we all talk about what the Bush's quote agenda really is, and all the fundamentalism that's inside of the fundamental Christianity, which is inside of our political system at this point. You know, I can come at it both ways. I can see the kind of mentality they're trying to create, and then I look at the very real issue of global warming, and I think that we have a big problem there, and it's important for those of us who are, you know, consider ourselves leftist and forward-thinking people to pull all of that apart, to really look into where are the problems with global warming and how they are really scaring people, and especially young people. You know, we're older and we've lived our lives to a certain extent, but we have children, and the women and the men I talk to in their 20s, they don't like what they see with this polar ice cap thing melting. I mean, it's serious stuff. And then you have the hysteria of, you know, the fundamental Christians and being jimmied out of your, you know, jammies or something, and being one of the few people that are allowed to exist. And you read that Bush actually believes all of that, and, you know, Ashcroft and the whole bunch of them. And so there's a danger in there. There's a danger in there. And I think we should look at it and try to figure out what it is and how we can articulate an ideology against all that.
Well, yeah, that's a given. You know, it's a strange thing. I, for many years, about a dozen years, I used to study personal injury cases. And in normal tort law, if you've injured someone, you've done damage, you have two options. The first one is to settle early, admit it, settle early, and you're going to pay the least amount as possible. Now, if it's something a little more heavy than that, say like you've caused the poisoning of the ozone layer, or acid rain, or something so enormous, your next option is to deny everything until the principals are dead, mm-hmm. and then you can pay their heirs about 10% on the dollar. So it seems to me that the chemical companies, the oil companies, the major polluters of this world, their theme is not to admit early and settle early. Their theme is to wait us out, wait until we're all dead, mm-hmm. and then either pay nothing or hope that our heirs are dumb enough to take, you know, a few pennies. So obviously the idea of paying the Congress to put together laws about tax breaks and, you know, ways that they can avoid paying taxes in America, they can haul all of their money overseas, and then any follow-up lawsuits or remediation lawsuits are going to be, you know, try to get that money once it's left the shores. That seems to be the real issue. So they're hoping to wait us out, I think.
Well, that's interesting, because a lot of them are actually a lot older than us, so I don't know how they're personally going to do it. But, you know, they asked Bush, how do you think your legacy will transpire? Like, how will people look on your presidency? He said, well, what does it matter? We'll all be dead. So clearly he's not even thinking about how he personally pans out historically. So, I mean, that's kind of a problem when you have a president who doesn't care what their legacy is. Clearly.
Yeah, it's a very strange thing. There's no united you stand, divided you fall in this aspect of it.
You know, and I also think that there was perhaps a time, maybe not a very large window of time, when actually the political rulers of our country actually had some kind of alliance with the working class inside this country, that there was this concept of, quote, America and the different factors that made up America and the working people, and, you know, we had some sort of vision or idea of us being together. And clearly, these upper echelon, in their own minds, political pundits and people that run the corporations have abandoned America, and they are kind of setting up their own enormous compounds all over the United States and internationally, which are houses and homes that are completely off the grid, that are completely stocked up, that are prepared, have their own kind of, I mean, all over the world you have huge family dynasties with their own police forces. Now they have these huge $40 million ships that you can buy that have their own police force on them. And clearly they are in a certain kind of mind frame about where this thing is all going. And if you look at how much outsourcing of jobs there are at this point, clearly they're fine with their a new kind of indentured servant kind of economy inside this country. So we have to look at how they've abandoned us completely. If anything, the person who believes in democracy in the United States, who believe in freedom of speech, are their biggest problems at this point, because we actually think we have a right to some kind of freedom here. You know, so I you can see how they're shutting down media and all kinds of things. But, you know, back on why I'm running against Pelosi, there's like 3 points I want to get on. I want to impeach Bush for crimes against humanity from Baghdad to Biloxi, Mississippi. We need to do something far-reaching and definite about global warming, which for me would include stop driving the automobile every day, that there people are limited to 5 days a week, and 2 days out of every week they have to find some other alternative transportation and get the troops out of Iraq immediately. And I think you could do that if we paid a certain amount of reparations to Iraqi people to rebuild their own country. No Halliburtons, no Bechtels, none of that. Sure. So those are my three main points. And now with this bombing of Lebanon, I think we should have a ceasefire immediately. And none of Pelosi, my opponent, doesn't go for any of those things as well. She voted for the Patriot Act, and she voted for Not One Child Left Behind. She knew about the NSA spying, and she didn't do anything about. So what part of anything did I mention represents the voter of San Francisco?
Sure. Yeah, no, that's an interesting thing. She's still got a certain amount of respect nationwide. Not only is she probably the single most powerful woman behind Condi being, what, third in line for the presidency. Nancy Pelosi is about, what, sixth or so. So it's she's certainly in a huge position of power. But apparently her decision to keep common sense in the fore, you know, she's in this kind of a fastest gun in the West mentality, that whatever stupid argument they come up with first, she's got to keep up with the argument with similar nonsense. So
look at what's going on between Lieberman and Lamont.
Right.
Lamont's 13 points ahead of Lieberman right now. Lieberman is, you know, a kingpin of the Democratic Party, and he can't get his numbers to go up by having Bill Clinton, Hillary, Barbara Boxer, any of the, quote, Democratic stars show up for him. So what I see out of that is the insider is dead in terms of how they're viewed by the general public. People are disgusted by the president, but they're disgusted by Congress, because Congress hasn't done anything. It's the biggest do-nothing group of people on the face of the earth.
Well, right, and that's actually very indicative that we won. You know, when we had 15 million people in the streets 3-4 years ago during the start of this war, we won. We just didn't know how to win. Mm-hmm. And now, as you reflect, the insider is dead. All the king's horses and all the king's men haven't been able to put America together again. And so these people are they're drawn at straws and hoping for something more egregious to happen that's going to make them look normal, make mm-hmm. them look sane.
Yeah, I think that it's hopefully it's coming to a close. And you know, also if you watch TV, you see the trend on television where the sort of people's choice through all the kind of reality TV shows is definitely the way people, the mentality that we have right now is the normal person deciding the next great person. And so I think that actually bodes well for campaigns like mine, like Kinky Friedman. Like, people want to come out and identify the next sort of power structure, and they don't want the insiders telling them how to think about problems that they have been unable to solve. And clearly what happened in Louisiana with Katrina showed something to the American public that our system is completely corrupt and ineffective and criminal. And a lot of people saw into how the African-American population was treated in Katrina as being a horrible crime against humanity.
Sure. Now, you're running for the 8th Congressional District. That's here in San Francisco.
Yes.
And small part of Marin County.
No, just San Francisco, actually.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't
no
include, I know everybody
okay.
thinks it,
yeah.
but as far as we know, from all that we've read and figured out, no, it's just San Francisco.
Well, it's Treasure Island,
yes,
too, right?
Yes, Treasure Island.
Okay. Well, yeah, I guess maybe some slight redistricting. It's shut it
yes.
out in the last little bit. In any case, this district is one of the wealthiest zip codes in America. Mm-hmm. And hypothetically, we are sucking all the money toward our zip codes, and the surrounding zip codes have to essentially pay obeisance to us. What can you offer the surrounding counties and the rest of California? What would you offer them that this shining city on the hill is going to, what would you help stabilize their lives? Because, you know, we're very much in an oasis, being mm-hmm. as wealthy as this zip code is, or this series of zip codes. Much of the rest of the state and nation are being sucked dry. Not only are the prosperous jobs of those different sections of the country rapidly getting outsourced to overseas, but even the figures who used to have stable incomes working for various governmental jobs, the police, the fire, the ambulance drivers and whatnot, they also, unfortunately, were members of the National Guard, and they're being sent overseas, and they're then when they come back injured, they're being laid in the laid on those counties as, you know, some disabled person who is now a burden on the counties. Mm-hmm. So what's your platform?
Clearly, the Bush's tax cut for the rich have to be repealed right away. And, you know, I would be a big proponent of a big federal program to create jobs for people. And clearly, we are so far behind in terms of transportation and energy sources that need to be updated, modernized, and be forward-thinking and far-reaching, that we could have enough jobs for everybody if we just started in on the global warming issue by, you know, alternate forms of energy, tidal power, solar power, wind power. There's so many businesses that could be started with federal money. There could be a whole housing boom that happened in the Bay Area that was low-income housing if we could get the federal government to stop putting $1 trillion. They've taken $1 trillion of our taxpayer dollars to bomb a country and destroy Iraq. If that money could come back into our government, we could make fabulous organic farms in every lot in the city and also in the surrounding areas to feed people, so we didn't have to truck our food around. We're trucking food from all over the world, which is sort of great because you get blueberries in the middle of the winter, but it's a problem in terms of gas is going to be a problem. Oil, peak oil is happening. So as long as that's going on, we need to reorient everything. And with our money going into our communities, we could reorient them to a place where everyone had a job and we could actually kind of live in a garden of earthly delight, but we can't get the right kind of leadership. And as long as you allow people to accumulate unbridled amounts of wealth, individuals to have unlimited resources, you're going to have a problem as long as the wealth is so poorly distributed. So I would suggest doing some kind of really what I would do is make a limit on how much one person could personally have. Like maybe $700 million is the limit. You know what I mean? But these people have enough money to have more money than the country of Haiti. You know, but Madonna could buy the island of Haiti.
Well, that's right. You know, it's funny you mentioned that Bush and his neocon buddies claim to be very religious. Was there something, a Moses guy, wasn't he talking about something about coveting?
Yeah.
And I don't seem to hear much about the Ten Commandments and coveting when it comes to oil of another nation.
Well, yeah, clearly, the main is thou shalt not kill, and they kill children all the time to demonstrate their, you know, whatever you said, that was a display of power and weaponry. And I don't know. I don't even like to look at how they create their moral fabric because it's so hypocritical. It makes me ill. You know, I can't even believe what comes out of their mouth and the kind of lifestyles that they lead. You know, it just, you know, even down to the Bohemian Grove and that little party that they have once a year. And just, the whole thing is, you know, what has been normalized is so heartbreaking. And, you know, as a mother and as a citizen and as a compassionate, caring person, I want very much for it to be different, you know. And so I'm running against Nancy Pelosi just as an, you know, as a way to get my ideas out and maybe break up the hegemony that the very lackluster Democrat has over our future, yours and mine, sitting here.
Well, that's right. And it crosses my mind that as you're able to travel around, there are a lot of clubs and organizations around the city. You can give 5 speeches a day without even sneezing. And the idea that you can induce a lot of projects. You're probably running into a lot of different people who have got a lot of great ideas. You mentioned gardens, transportation systems, solar, all of these different potential industries.
What about our school systems are an abomination? And since San Francisco, the wealthiest zip code, have you seen the public school system? My daughter was in there. I mean, except for the first couple, you know, the grade 1, K through 5, the rest of it was a wreck, a train wreck. And, you know, they need money, they need better supplies, they need buildings, they need, you know, teachers, they need everything. And we could pump so much money into after school programs. There's our creativity is unlimited. What we can imagine is unlimited. What is in the way is also equally as thick. And we need to break up what's in the way and start creating the world that we want our children to be able to inherit.
Sure. So that said, you know, you can turn this whole campaign into a networking system and essentially create many of the programs that, with or without federal money, that's one of the advantages that politicians have is the networking that they are able to do on a daily basis mm-hmm. is to create, make those meshes really pull together on a constant basis as opposed to, you know, even if you don't get elected, let's say, and frankly, you know, I'd always push for you to give it 100%. There's no need not to try 100%. You seem like you get a little energy, so.
Well, I'm giving it 100%. Mostly what I need is contributions. I need money. It's funny how you need money. Not only do you need money to pay for leaflets and flyering and stuff and all that, but people love to say, well, how much money have you raised? Like, how much money you've raised is actually an indication of whether you're being successful or not. So if you like my ideas out there, you can go to my website, which is chrissyforcongress.com, and there is a place where you can make a donation on the website. And there's also an address if you don't want to pay with a credit card. You can send us a check or send some money. Or we actually are having a fabulous event tomorrow night at Dance Mission. It's a End the War event with myself and then Michael Berg, who is running as a Green Party candidate against Pelosi,
in Delaware,
because as many of you have heard the name before, Michael Berg hit the spotlight when his son was murdered in Iraq. It was a very gruesome murder that we all watched on television, and he blames the Bush administration and Cheney and Rumsfeld for the death of his son. He feels like his son went out over there with an honest intention to do the right thing, and he was murdered by the opposite forces. And Michael Berg is touring the country and running for Congress to break up again the Democratic Party and try to make a difference. And so both of us are speaking tomorrow night, along with Ross Mercurini, our fabulous supervisor from District 5, the Haight, will be there. He's our Green Party supervisor. And Ronnie Gilbert, who was the founding member of the Weavers, she will be there as well. And then somebody will be speaking from Chris Daley's office on his he's putting a thing in front of all of us, the voters, to impeach Bush, a resolution saying that the San Francisco voters would like to see impeachment proceedings begin on George Bush and Dick Cheney for crimes against humanity. So tomorrow it's Dance Mission. It's 24th and Mission, 3316 24th Street, and it's upstairs above Cafe La Boheme.
Yeah, that's right over 24th and Mission. So it looks over the BART, right?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Hey, we've also got another DJ here, Fernando Venceremos. He has a couple of questions.
Great.
Hi, Chrissy. Just to get a better perspective of the Green Party, to a lot of people that are frightened and not sure about the Green Party people, Green Party candidates, conjecturally speaking, you're looking in front of a crowd of Republicans, a crowd of Democrats. Mm-hmm. How can you best reflect upon them to say, we got to revitalize the entire process and drawing them to your party, to the Green Party, to your candidacy? What would you?
Well, I think that I hope I'm speaking to this right, but I think that the fact that we're only, quote, allowed to have a two-party system inside this country is really a problem. And if you look at the other democracies, what happens is they actually get representation in the government for their party. So they have to make a coalition of ideas there rather than just this kind of duking out that goes back and forth between the Democrats and Republicans, back and forth and back and forth. So by the time, you know, you get 100 years down the road, you have a margin of debate, which is about a quarter of an inch. So I think that reforming that, I don't know exactly, I guess that would be redoing the Constitution. But I think that if the Greens could become a viable voice inside this country, we would have a much stronger debate around the issues, which clearly we need.
One other question, what you're trying to also reflect upon is really pluralism,
pluralism, yes,
to where people are now identified and acquainted that that's a good thing,
yes,
a good word.
Yes.
And I know I use the word universal pluralism because once we all have voice, we all have value,
yeah,
then we have a vested interest in what we have. And it's something that to extend to all people is part of your campaign.
Right, yeah.
Pluralism to where,
yeah,
we all can speak.
Yes, and clearly that's what I was speaking a little bit back about, the idea that the people's choice is going to decide the next candidate, is that when people like myself run, people look at me and they go, oh, she's like me. She represents me. And I'm a forward-thinking humanitarian. And that's the kind of person that I want in Congress. And, you know, we all have a value system. We all went through the 60s together, and we believe in something. We want our beliefs to become central rather than to be the radical fringe edge, you know, that the idea of peace and justice is like a loopy little idea, you know. We're trying to say, no, this is the platform. Yeah.
Well, that's the normalcy again.
Yeah.
And, we're certainly looking for something normal in our lives, a way to raise our children. They've actually portrayed normal as if it's a flaky idea. They want the neatest, newest adventure every day. They're looking for miracles every day.
Yeah.
And at this point, with the hazardous wastes and global warming and the structural collapse of the economy and the brain drain that's caused by globalization, they're mandating that all of the structures of normalcy that this world has kept, that's kept this civilization going for eons, is now being torn apart at such a rapid rate, and they're actually going to try to out-hip us by saying that we're supposed to have newer, shinier trinkets of guns and hate, and that happiness and peace is some sort of a sad ideal. So it's obviously they're trying to out-hip us with a crappy...
Well, they always take our ideas and reform them and shove them back at us and make some sort of Orwellian speak, so you can't hardly figure out what the hell's going on, what's going on. But, it's pretty amazing how it all keeps happening. And clearly, if we could use my campaign, and then I would just ask everyone to join as a kind of, move around the city networking. I like that idea. Aristotle had this word peripatetic, which meant he moved around and he gathered people in and he philosophized as he went along. And you know, they just sort of walking through the great cities. And that's what we should do together. We should walk and we should start to coalesce and we should start to build our movement. And just what's happening in Mexico, where they're shutting down the city for a recount. Now, if we don't get that in our brains to start doing stuff like that, because clearly we know the elections process at this point is very funky. It's very funky. We don't know if we're ever going to win any elections again. And if we don't figure out a real strong way to demonstrate against all of that, we're never going to get the candidates that we want. So that's, to me, what's happening in Mexico right now as they recount the votes. Very exciting and could bode very well for our future.
You know, if I was going to ask for one issue to be dealt with on the campaign trail, back when our country was founded, 1776 and whatnot, the mandate was that we would have a new congressman for every 60,000 people. Mm-hmm. And so Congress was, gaining a seat almost every week or so in its way, and every census they would tally up how many new Americans there were, and they would add a few more seats. Well, 1914, they decided to limit Congress to a total of 435 people. So the burden of a congressman went from 60,000 people total to an ever-increasing number. And now a congressman gets 600,000 to 800,000. I think it depends on where you are in the country. But your burden is now, you know, closing in on 750,000 people. And it's physically impossible for one person to represent 750,000 people. And so the idea, I mean, when people ask how old are these neocons, how long is this you know, attack on America been going on to try to destroy our democracy, I would say it certainly, when that series of restrictions on representation kicked in 1914, that idea that we would have Congress limited to 435 people, you can have your bribes go further. Mm-hmm. If you have a person that's elected 20 years ago and you bribed them 19 years ago, you gave them a, you know, a cheap insurance rate, you gave them a great mortgage price, you did something to sucker them into an illegal act, you've got them hooked. Mm-hmm. And no matter what 750,000 people say, you have got the ability to control them. And when Nancy Pelosi came into office, well, it's got to be over 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
Yeah. She was probably sitting on a half million a half million in population for her district. Mm-hmm. Now it's closing in on 750,000. Mm-hmm. And she's not got the ability to, no one has the ability to represent. We the people are not being representative.
Right.
We should be having one congressman for every 60,000 people. Congress should be closing in on 5,000
mm-hmm.
members.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that we would have corruption, if you have 5,000 representatives, that means you have, and you're crooked, you have to bribe 2,500 different people. Well, when you've got 435, you've only got to bribe, you know,
right.
225 people.
Right.
So, you know, obviously, the corrupt are going to have a tougher time,
mm-hmm.
When you have a larger constituent assembly. So, mm-hmm. you know, that to me, in regaining America, that seems to me to be one of the real shaking out points is when we're going to get our democracy back.
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to be able to get, a manageable number of, for our representatives.
Mm-hmm. You think they'd have any idea in changing that, and that the federal government would ever go along with paying for that? You know what I mean? Like paying for 5,000 Congress people and a big old house to have them have their meetings in?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting.
They hate the federal government. Have you noticed how the government hates itself at this point? They want to get rid of it completely.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a part of the neocon strategy.
Yeah.
Is you know, they've been pushing this idea that the strong loner is the one that's the American ideal, and that the person that bands together is a commie.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So they're essentially saying, divided you stand, united you fall.
Yes.
And, of course, America was founded on united you stand, divided you fall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they've been pushing this neocon shell game for decades, long, long time. The Marlboro Man is the clear ideal
mm-hmm.
of them, this
mm-hmm.
proud loner that mm-hmm. that ignores what everybody...
With lung cancer.
Exactly. You know, I remember there are a lot of examples of these proud loners that are ending up dead in a ditch somewhere. And so united you stand, divided you fall is the reality here. And they're still trying to make us sound like we're some kind of a loony because we want united you stand. And so, you know, this the idea that a constituent assembly can get something done. You know, we're simply dealing with taxation with representation. We're paying some taxes.
Yeah.
We want to have somebody
yes.
who's going to be able to see to it that it's spent wisely.
Right.
Now, when you have a body that is winnowed down with whether they're corrupted or whether they are co-opted, just a group of people who have an inability to represent any of their constituents because the constituent size is way too big to manage. 750,000 people, that's impossible to manage. You know, think of the 50 people you admire the most, and there's 50 different complications in their personalities that they can't agree on anything. So the idea that you're going to be the representative of 50 people, and when you have a population like San Francisco, we've got one of the most educated populations in America, and the idea that we're represented by only one person. I mean, imagine if this educated population could come up with 60,000 per, you know, we'd have 10 representatives and upwards of 10 representative, possibly 12 if it's the numbers of 750,000. So it's, you know, we're grossly underrepresented, and this has been a scandal forever. And, you know, it's obviously China, you know, has got an ability to have a constituent assembly. India has got far more than 5,000 in theirs. And if they only have 5,000 when they've got 1 billion people, you know, then they're being grossly underrepresented. Yeah. So it's an idea that each district is going to have a hand in controlling how their money is being spent. And it's simply a matter of taxation with representation. If we're calling for these people to make sure that our district is being represented, but there are some con artists that are going to control that money from the linchpin of blackmail, then obviously that's not representation. So, you know, if I was going to ask for one thing from my congressman, it's the idea that we get a constituent assembly that more represents the true population. And it's when you limit it to 435 and the population grows, you know you're in a stacked deck then. So it doesn't matter whether or not it should be 5,000. The fact of the matter is it should be 5,000. But it's whatever number, it's 435 is way too small for it. So it's.
Well, I'll work on that when I get elected. Well, you know, what's interesting, though, in response, not directly to what you said, in Pelosi's district, our district, District 8, there are 339,000 registered voters, of which half of which will vote, which is like 169,000. So I need to get half of that. So I need 84,000 votes. Now, that's not out of the question. You know, when you consider the kind of people that the number of people from the Mission District itself that showed up to vote for Matt Gonzalez's campaign, people didn't even know that that demographic existed. And there's a huge number of young people in this city and young people who do not care about Pelosi. Like, there's a certain allegiance in this city about Nancy that came out of her being elected 20 years ago, and a lot off the good graces of the women's movement sort of ushered her in, you know, and she's not responding to the concerns of the real, which is our peace and justice, or the issues of the feminist movement. But the people under 30 don't even know Pelosi. They go, who are you running against? I mean, there's no real heart feeling or response. I tell you, I've talked to thousands of people, and I can count 30 people who have had the guts to say to me, oh, no, I'm voting for her. So really, her popularity in the streets is not what everybody says that it is. I know from being out there. So,
well, the endorsements alone, she hasn't been endorsed in two terms now by the Bay Guardian.
Yeah. So, you know, and I actually did get the Green Party endorsement by the Bay Guardian, and so I'm pretty sure I'll carry that over. So, you know, we'll see how it comes down, but we just all have to get on the same page here, and, you know, as Green Tara says, actions speak louder than words.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, well, thanks again for being here. Now, your event is coming up tomorrow night, and that's going to be, again, just go to 24th Street Bar.
24th and Mission, 3316 24th Street, upstairs above the cafe, Dance Mission.
Yeah.
At 7 o'clock, and there'll be a wonderful discussion and cultural event, and you'll get to meet Michael Berg and talk to him about his world. He's fasting right now. He's fasting against the war in Iraq. If you want a way to get your voice out there about what's going on in Iraq and Lebanon, come on down, ask questions, be with like-minded people, and we'll try together to make a difference in this.
Sure. Yeah, we've done a couple of interviews with the Troops Home Fast group. So, that's,
oh, great, with the Code Pink women.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, we caught them just as they were getting on the plane yesterday.
Oh, awesome.
And so it... Yeah, it's been a very serious effort. Yeah, Michael's he's a great guy. Just if you go to the event tomorrow night, don't work him too hard. He is fasting.
Yes, yeah. come on over to Dance Mission. We'll have a good time. Thank you.
Hey, well, thanks for being here, Chrissy.
Yeah, thank you so much. That was excellent.
Yeah, our pleasure. And just to go out here, we've been lucky enough when Nicholasburg, Michael's son, was executed few years ago now, I caught a whole lot of different talk radio shows that were talking about this issue, and we'll go into a little of this. There's always been some strange anomalies about the death of Nicholas Byrd.
Are you back to me? Wait, this is a... Okay. Somebody has emailed me this. There's a web forum for people who are very right-wing. It's called Free Republic, a.k.a. Freepers. They claim to have some influence with politicians, intelligence people, and military. The Freepers actually brag they will get people who step outside the bounds in their judgment in trouble with their military units. I don't know how effective they are. Anyway, in March, the company that Nick Berg called Prometheus was put on an enemies list by Free Republic because of his father's anti-war activities. Could some MPs have connected Nick to that list and detained him? This story is really weird. God almighty. I'm asking if anyone can make sense of it. Leonard.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call, Lynn.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, in light of everything that past couple of weeks that we've heard about with the prison and now Mr. Berg and now all this other stuff coming out about what he was involved in, you know, it's curious, where has our National Security Advisor, Condoleezza Rice, been?
I think she's been giving graduation speeches.
I don't know, it sounds kind of weird that she'd be doing all that with in light of all this other things that are going on. It sounds like a pretty serious national security problem to me.
Well, I'm sure she's at work. I who the heck knows? I don't know. She's probably still recovering from, you know, her with the Klieg lights on her during her 9/11 testimony and smoking her after that.
We haven't seen or heard from her since then.
Well, I don't know, Leonard. It's yet another strange question. Carol Wilkinsburg, hi.
Yes, that email that you got, that's what I wanted to talk about. I didn't know if you had heard about it.
No, I haven't.
The Free Republic website. And it is funny. It says, you know, on March 7th that they got this website. I can't remember the name of the organization.
I've got it right here. So it says on the March 7th, just 3 weeks before the first anniversary of the invasion of Iraq, this group, this Free Republic Forum, published an enemies list of anti-war groups and individuals. It began.